Hello, good evening, and welcome. I'm not David Frost. I'm Ewan Spence, and you're listening to Through the Keyhole. No, you're not. You're listening to the All About Symbian Insight podcast number 162. A nice, big, proud number, and a nice, big, proud welcome to my fellow presenters here. We only have two this week. Steve heard I was hosting has decided to run away. Probably the wisest decision of anybody in the All About Symbian team this week. But joining me from Hull, the home of John Prescott, we have David Gilson.
Hello, everybody. And no comments about John Prescott, I'm afraid.
Oh, it's Lord Prescott now, we have to be aware. And also, with the biggest question of the day down in Sussex, Rafe Blanford.
Hello,
was
everybody.
Was this a good idea to have me hosting?
Well, we'll just have to wait and see, Ewan.
Well, can I introduce the kazoo of time?
I can always edit it out afterwards.
You could, yes. This is in honour of Doctor Who starting up in the UK and in America this coming weekend. Essentially, the kazoo of time will ring if somebody talks for too long on one topic.
So that'll be me then.
The kazoo of death is in the room. But lots of things are in the room this week, and we're going to touch on all of them at www.allaboutsymbian.com. You can leave your comments there as well. We also have a Twitter account where you can ask us questions throughout the weeks, and anytime that you feel you have a pressing question of what's going on, it's at AAS. This week, of course, in the last 7 days, has seen a couple of great big announcements, a lot of intangible products, lots of speculation, and a number of questions. And the great thing about it was Rafe was actually in the room with Nokia early in the week, small roundtable session, to tell us and find out what has been going on. There are letters, there are numbers, and there are names. Rafe, shall we start with the name? Who is Anna?
Anna is the new software update for Symbian 3 devices. People will have previously known this as PR 2.0. And the reason it's being called Anna, well, it's the first letter in the alphabet, and there will be further updates to come. Nokia wouldn't be drawn on details or timing or anything like that, but they did say there would be more updates. And it's a pretty good bet that the next one will begin with a B, so you can look forward to Symbian B, Symbian Blondie at some point in the future. And I would estimate that that will be probably towards the end of the year, but we'll obviously have to wait and see. But the reason for moving to the naming scheme was it was easier to communicate than trying to sort out firmware versions or PR releases or things like that. And yes, I think it's quite an effective strategy, certainly better than trying to remember numbers and things like that.
Let's talk about, let's talk about dates though. Nokia have caught a little bit of flack online about PR 2.0. They've never said when PR 2 was going to be, but everybody kind of assumed it was going to be here February and March. So it's late. But it's not late, yeah?
Yeah, this is a fairly, you know, typical of the mobile industry. But, you know, from power users, they always want it immediately. And, you know, a few Nokia spokesmen sort of talked about the first half of 2011 for the update. And the general assumption, it was going to be Q1. And I don't think Nokia ever did anything to correct that. So saying it's late, I don't think it's entirely inaccurate. But at the same time, they have got a bit of wiggle room. And it's also worth noting that Symbian Anna actually has a few more things than were scheduled for PR 2.0. So I would say, you know, you could probably argue it was a couple of months late, but I don't really think it's a big issue. And we've discussed this sort of timing issue before. In an ideal world, you want everything delivered as soon as possible and certainly on schedule, but it doesn't always work out like that. And I think in this particular instance, the amount of damage done is probably relatively minor.
The thing is, though, Riff, I think something that has annoyed a lot of people, and it's something which keeps infuriating me with Nokia, is it's not so much the fact that when they actually come out with something, I think we all understand that things can take longer than planned. The thing is, what Nokia always do, they always announce something and then say, but it's coming in a couple of months. If they could just wait until they were actually ready to go and then come out and say, yes, we've done this, this, and this, and it'll be out to buy in in less than a month.
I'll quickly go in there so we don't have to use the kazoo of death, David. I think the main thing is fiduciary responsibility. When you have a publicly listed company as large as Nokia, they have to present information that is strategically important to the share to the market first of all. Now, people are going to go, but Apple can manage. Well, Apple don't show off all the products. There are millions of partners around all of the networks around the world. They have to control the message and do it at the best time for Nokia. They have to literally go out and sell these phones. They can't do that quietly. For example, if they were to take the X7 and take it, I don't know, to an American network, for example, show it around, has to go through all the testing and everything, invariably a garbled message comes out on what this strange device is. And as we've seen with the X7, this has actually happened in the past. We'll touch on the X7 briefly later on in this Insight podcast. So part of it is simply to control the message. It's very hard to get something in any endeavor out silently. I'm going to stay with Doctor Who there. The sudden appearance of Billy Piper at the end of one of the episodes 2 years ago was a Herculean thing for a 5-second cutaway that wasn't even part of the script. Their greatest triumph was not getting that into the sun. So the more people you tell a secret to, it exponentially increases it. What Nokia have to get these phones out and in the public eye with their message relatively quickly before they could do a major selling around all the networks who are their major customer. Not individuals, it's the networks. And there is a balance point there. And I think, you know, getting that wait down to maybe 4 or 5 weeks, I think is about the right amount of time. And let's be honest, that's about the same amount of time that you have for the iPhones and the iPads as well, isn't it, Rafe?
Yes, I mean, I definitely agree with what you said there, Ewan. And I think we have to bear in mind they said Q2 for these particular set of devices, and we're essentially halfway through April. So that gives them 2.5 months. I think there's a couple of factors we should also consider here. One of which is, you know, Nokia's doing global launches. And so the first, you know, set of these devices will probably come out in a certain market in, you know, anything, maybe 6 weeks' time, let's say, you know, end of May. As you say, that's very similar to iPhone, but that global rollout then continues. And, you know, people talk about the iPhone and the Android devices, and they can often take 3 or 4 additional months after the first release to get out to the other markets, or even longer in some cases. So I don't think this is unique to Nokia by any means. I would also draw a division between software updates and actual devices, but this next point applies to both of them, in that Nokia almost, you know, they can't win here. If they don't announce that there's going to be a software update, they'll be criticised for it. If they announce a software update doesn't arrive on time, or people don't think it's arriving quickly enough, or doesn't have enough in it, or unsatisfied with it, you know, they get criticised for that. And so it's almost a no-win situation for them, I think, particularly with regard to software updates. The situation is improving there, and I think, you know, compared to what we used to have, where people would only have an expectation of a bug fix, you know, obviously having a significant software update like Symbian Anna is good, and we should touch on what's actually in it in a minute. And I think the other factor to consider in all of this is, as Ewan says, you know, it's actually hard to keep these things under wraps when you've got a lot of partners and everything like that. And compared to what it used to be, actually things are much better. You know, we're not seeing the sort of 6-month lead time, and there is a certain amount of improvement still to go, and I think we will see that more in the future. And I think that's something that Stephen Elop has definitely said he wants to improve. And Nokia have been saying it for a while, but of course it does take a while for these things to kick in. But this time around, I think actually a 2-month window for a, you know, device between announcement and release is perfectly acceptable. Of course, we do have to see that they deliver, you know, this E6 and the X7, you know, by the end of May, or, you know, sometime in June to hit that window.
I think Nokia is in a unique combination of circumstances, possibly. I mean, for as much as people disregard Symbian, I think the conversation is still between, like, 3 sets of iOS, Android, and Symbian. I mean, Apple is unique in that they've only ever got one phone that they're pushing. Android, you've got a zoo of manufacturers, and really, whatever phones come out there, it's like, oh, well, it's just another Android slate. And there's not so much focus on any one particular design. Whereas with Symbian, Nokia is very good at hardware, and we actually have devices that look interesting with great designs. So people actually do get very keen when they hear about it. They say, oh, we want to get our hands on it. And people end up feeling frustrated that they can't, because the that must come down to how good Nokia is at design.
And it's also fair to point out that there's so many combinations. You're at the top level, when we're a website, we see X7. Nokia don't see X7. Nokia see X7 for AT&T, X7 for Orange, X7 for Vodafone, X7 for Vodafone Germany, X7 for Vodafone India, and so on and so on and so on. Each of those is a separate model. And, you know, we'll come onto software briefly, but just to highlight, you know, you've got to make sure that the firmware update works on all of those. We've seen what happened with Windows Phone 7. There was one combination that didn't quite work, and that gummed up the entire firmware upgrade process. It's a balance between responsibility and leadership. And it's going to be interesting to see over this year what the ELOP leadership, where it puts that balance on.
Okay, yeah, though, I think that's all good points. And we've got rather away from this discussion here, Ewan. So should we talk a little bit about what's actually in Symbian, Anna, for those that want to know more about the details?
That sounds like a great idea, because we're not here to apologise for Nokia. We're here to look at the big, shiny things that move faster than they ever have before. And in my mind, that means the inclusion of a Gopher browser. No, it means an inclusion of a web browser.
Absolutely, yeah. No, the new Symbian Anna version, it has the long-promised update to the web browser. Now, there are some important points to understand here in that the improvements here are really around faster performance. One of the bigger reasons is for that is actually better caching. But there's also an improved user interface, which is sort of being put up as more intuitive. It's really about less taps on the screen and address bar sitting at the top rather than the bottom. And also you're getting the portrait keyboard and improved text input with split screen input, which has a big effect in the browser. In terms of the actual technical side of things, it is an updated version of WebKit, and we are seeing the first elements of HTML5 support coming in here. We did have a story on the site, which I'll link to in the show notes, which talks about how it's not actually particularly good HTML5 support. But I will say, having tried this out myself a few days ago, that the browser is a lot quicker and goes a long way, I think, with both the user interface and the performance to addressing some of the concerns that people have. There has been some discussion around, as I say, the HTML5 performance in particular. And the reason for this is because the new browser is actually still based on the code base of the other one. The version of the browser we currently have is 7.2. The new one is 7.3. And both of those are based on the Symbian C++ WebKit code base. And people have been asking, so why aren't they using the Qt WebKit code base? And obviously they both use the WebKit rendering engine, which is sort of inherent in a lot of mobile browsers these days. But the Qt WebKit browser is more fully up to date and has better HTML5 support. But the reason I'm told that they're not using the Qt WebKit browser is it wasn't quite ready in enough time. You have to bear in mind the lead times on this, particularly when you're browsing it, building a browser UI and experience around it, because the Qt WebKit is really just the rendering part, not the application that goes with it. And so we will see Qt WebKit likely used in the future updates, and probably that'll be the Symbian B that I talked about earlier on. So I think there's been a lot of criticism for Nokia, why aren't they using them more recently? And yes, I would say from a personal point of view, I'd love to see them using a Qt WebKit based browser, but I would stress, having tried it, this is a big improvement on what we currently have, and I would actually celebrate that rather than start getting too bogged down in technical details about what we could have, especially given that will arrive in due course. Let's say the big things here to concentrate on in terms of you know, what's new in this browser is it's faster in day-to-day use. You can open new windows and sort of have multiple window control much more easily than you can on the old browser. You've got the improved text input, which makes it easier to do searching and inputting of addresses. It's actually more responsive when you touch on the screen and when you're scrolling about and zooming in and out. So all in all, I think it's a very big step up. And obviously, we'll talk about this more and have more features on the site when we can do some side-by-side comparisons. But I think it's a pretty positive upgrade. And together with the text input things, it's probably the biggest thing in Symbian Anna as far as end users are concerned.
Now, Rift, let's just put this in layman's terms for people who aren't conversant with terms like Qt WebKit and WebKit. With HTML5, we're going to have better interactivity with websites, so we can use better web services. But since this isn't quite up to scratch with what we see on Android and iOS, we're not going to get the best, most interactive versions of, say, of Google services like the Gmail website, for example. But it is going to be better interactivity, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. I mean, HTML5 is actually a kind of general term for a lot of technologies, and WebKit sort of addresses some of those, and some of those are down to JavaScript and indeed other technologies as well to do with video, as you were mentioning there. So it's, you know, a bit misleading to talk about it in such general terms. But yes, you're right, one of the most important things, I think, probably in HTML5 is multimedia handling, particularly with regard to video. Now, this is considered particularly important on something like iOS because it doesn't have the existing Flash support, which, of course, Symbian does have for handling web video. And so it's much more of a necessary thing, I would say, on iOS at the moment. In looking forward a year or so or 2 years, HTML5 becomes more and more important. And so, yes, it will become more important to support it. Right now, actually, the uses on mobile in particular are relatively limited. And it's a standard that's still being defined. You know, no browser has perfect HTML5 support, regardless whether we look at mobile or desktop. So, you know, it is quite a technical conversation to, you know, get, you know, people talk about and get excited. But I mean, I think the message for me would be, it's a bit annoying from a technical point of view that they haven't used the most recent version, which would be Qt WebKit. And as you say, WebKit is kind of the rendering part, you know, the bit that makes the web page work. And the Qt bit is it's in a part of Qt, which we've talked about a lot on the podcast, you know, that application framework, that sort of programming language, if you will. But as I say, it's actually more important for most people is, does it actually improve their end user experience on the web, you know, how it works in the real world? And the answer is yes, the new browser does that.
And talking of user experience, there was one thing I was disappointed not to see with a new web browser. I was hoping that when the prophesized browser came eventually that they would integrate with all these services and at least offer some form of bookmark syncing, because since time immemorial with Symbian phones, you've had two ways to transmit your bookmarks out of the phone. It's been SyncML, which is hardcore territory, I think is fair to say, or with Bluetooth sync, which is a faff, and they still haven't integrated the services yet.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are several things that people would have hoped to see in this browser. I think another good example is geolocation, which allows you to integrate with GPS. There are other ways to do this, of course, on the Nokia platform through web runtime and things like that. But yes, it's worth pointing out, you know, there are disappointments in this new browser, but on the whole, I think people will be very pleased to see it.
Let me take even a step back from that layman's view. Rafe, why don't Nokia just buy Opera? They've got browser sync. They've got geolocation. They can even use streaming media, YouTube and such like. Surely Opera, in the same way that Sony Ericsson found out with the P900s, is the way to go.
Yeah, well, as you may remember, that was what happened at one point. You know, there was Opera on Series 60 as it was back then, and you quite rightly cite the UIQ example. But I suspect this is a case of web and HTML and web technologies being too important investment for Nokia to farm out. And while licensing Opera would be a short-term solution, it's not a long-term solution. You have to remember that the web element, and it's a web application and stuff that powers underneath it, also used to power all the web runtime technology, and there's a lot of widgets and applications out there running on that. And so that integrating all of that bit using the Opera technology would be significantly more difficult. And so it's as much an integration issue as anything else. Of course, web also fits into all sorts of other places on the phone as well. And so it seems like it would be a good idea. But in terms of the practicality, it's not really going to happen. It's not really going to be effective. It's, you know, almost, if you like, too important a thing for Nokia to give up. I would say, you know, for people who want to use it, you know, yes, they can install Opera. And the sort of lack of integration is a shame, although there are points at where that's improving, notably in messaging and things like that.
Okay, yes. Rafe.
Does that give you your answer?
It does, yes. Yeah. So we'll move on to those new devices as well. But let me ask you one very quick question, and the kazoo is in operation on this one. What's the one feature from PR 2.0 Anna that you think is most important that's not been mentioned anywhere yet?
Great question, Ewan. There's quite a few things we haven't mentioned, but I think probably the most significant that's been underrated into the coverage of it is the split-screen keyboard in, or the split-screen input for text entry. And this is one of the usability improvements. We haven't mentioned this, but there is the QWERTY portrait browser. That's arrived as expected. But I think the more important element of the new text entry is the split-screen keyboard. And this has appeared in a few places in the current version, in sort of PR 1.1. But what split-screen text input does is, rather than have text input take over the whole screen so you can't see what you're typing into, it actually overlays the keyboard and the text entry input over what's already there. And so if you're, say, in conversations, you're in messaging, you can see the previous text messages that you're replying to. If you're in search in Ovi Maps, you can see the results appear as you type in, or if you're typing in a code into a web page, you can see the form as you type things in. And I think that makes a very big difference, and it's something that, you know, other platforms have, and it was really quite shocking in one sense that it was missing on the Symbian platform. So if I had to pick out one thing that hasn't really been talked about very much, split screen input would be it.
And it's an interesting one, because I remember the online, there's a huge vehemence against T9 being there and not having portrait QWERTY, but I found T9 to be far more useful for me, possibly because I'm on the smaller device like the C6 and I'm used to going one-handed. T9 gives you great big target area, good text input. But, you know, what's interesting here is Nokia are now giving the choice to everything. You've got T9, you've got portrait, you've got landscape. We've still got swipe kicking around as well, haven't we?
Yes, that's right. Swipe will actually work straight away with Symbian, and if you've got it installed, it's ready to go. It's already enabled for the portrait keyboard. And yes, you're right. You know, I think this is quite a subjective thing as to which one you prefer. I will say that the QWERTY Portrait works better on the larger screen devices, the X7 and the E7. They both have 4-inch screens. Very comfortable on that. I think it's fine on the 3.5-inch screens of the C7 N8. On the C6, which does have that slightly smaller screen, it may be more difficult, and it really depends on how big your fingers and thumbs are. But as you say, you know, you do have the choice there. You can switch back to the alphanumeric keyboard. That's the T9 keyboard. You can use swipe. You can use this QWERTY portrait. But I do think, you know, it was one of these kind of almost hygiene things. It had to have QWERTY portrait keyboard in there. And again, it's one of the things I'm very glad to arrive, because I think it's, you know, whenever you read reviews of Symbian 3 devices, the two big complaints were text input and web browser. And although there's room for improvement, probably on both of them, to be fair, they have now arrived. They're ready there. And so those two big concerns go away with this Symbian Anna update.
And it's also fair to say you can plug in a USB full-size keyboard as well.
Yeah, that's true as well.
No problems with your finger spacing. You can do it blindfolded. Not a bit of problem portability-wise. Strap it to your arm like Buzz Lightyear. Lots of consumer stuff we talked about there, though. And David, I know you've been more focused on the sort of enterprise stuff, the email, the calendar support, all the sort of stuff that people use to earn money with their phones rather than play Angry Birds, yep?
Yeah, so Riff, I think the main things that we look for in enterprise, we want a decent office suite, good mail for exchange support and IMAP support, and preferably drive encryption. So what can we expect to see from Symbian Anna on those points?
Well, as you know, for things like office editing, that's really, really served by QuickOffice. And on the E-series devices with QWERTY keyboards, you do get the premium version that allows editing. Talking about the enterprise improvements in Anna, there's a few things that are worth mentioning. It's rolling in the update we've seen a little bit elsewhere, which is fixing sort of meeting requests. They will now work without any problems. But I think the big one is the provision of 6 new security policies for sort of Microsoft Exchange servers, and that's basically allowing better device management or setting better security policies. The most significant of those is the one that allows you to enable encryption of a device remotely from sort of the Microsoft Exchange device management tool. So we're talking about device encryption. That will be arriving with this update, and actually the encryption and decryption is actually hardware accelerated thanks to a Symbian 3 enabler. And so actually from that point of view, you know, it's really a very important security point. And there is one other thing that's probably worth mentioning from an enterprise point of view is Microsoft Communicator Mobile will, you know, be on these devices by default. That's a sort of corporate IM and presence solution from Microsoft, which is actually unique to the Symbian platform. It's not available on any other mobile platform. It's actually been developed and certified by Microsoft, and the sort of, you know, this really applies to the E6, but of course the other devices have exactly the same software as well, so it's, you know, equally true across all the Symbian 3 devices. Nokia say that these devices, the Symbian 3 devices with Anna, have the best possible Microsoft messaging solution on a mobile device. Now, you know, I think Microsoft might take contention with that with Windows Phone 7 having a pretty good Exchange implementation, but in terms of the breadth of the support, you know, with the QuickOffice support, with the Microsoft Communicator Mobile, and of course with the Exchange support in there as well, particularly with regard to some of the security policies that have been implemented, you know, it is arguable that yes, this is, you know, the best Microsoft messaging solution on mobile. And I think that's very important as well, just thinking about Nokia's longer term strategy. You know, enterprises tend to operate on, you know, 12, 18, 24 month timescales at an absolute minimum in terms of device purchase, and sometimes it can be 3 or 4 years. And so saying, well, can we buy a Nokia? Is it sort of future-proof? What about the platform change? But actually the platform change won't affect them because they're all enabled for Microsoft services. So if you're a company that has, you know, a Microsoft back-end, actually Nokia is a pretty sensible device purchase decision because you avoid some of the BlackBerry tactics that get talked about. You've got, you know, it's a guarantee that there will be a Nokia solution that will work with Microsoft both now and in the future. And so the enterprise features are probably going to get largely ignored. And actually, in Symbian and Anna, they're relatively minor in the feature points, but actually they do some pretty important things in terms of particularly the encryption and the security there on the exchange policy front.
So we have all this talk of new enterprise stuff and certificates and browsers, lots of real nitty-gritty stuff and stuff that coders have probably been sweating over, you know, for months and months. But what's the most important thing about this update, Rafe? Is it the fact that the icons now have curves on them?
Sadly, it is. You know, that's what people are going to notice most of all. And the irony of this is basically that's just a theme change. You know, it's a new icon set. And, you know, people go, oh, it looks much shiny, it looks new. Oh, doesn't it look great, Symbian, now? Okay. But it's just the icons that have changed, really. The UI changes haven't come at all. I mean, as we know, PR2 isn't really about that. It's, you know, they talked about usability improvements, which I think it is fair to say you get that with the text input in the browser. But this is, you know, this is not a new UI. That's the thing that's sort of due in the next update. Yet simply by delivering a fresh set of icons, you know, it's given it a more contemporary feel. Whether you actually like it or not is entirely subjective. And, you know, I think from a point of view, yes, it looks nice and fresh, but I'm not really fooled by it, to be quite honest. It is just a new theme and icon set, and that doesn't really change the fundamental, you know, way you use the device, for me at least.
So essentially, Rafe, you're saying it's the difference between Marks and Spencers and Licenza?
Well, I you could put it that way, but I couldn't possibly comment.
Because Rafe looks gorgeous in Licenza, I have to say.
That's not really much I can say to that.
I think we should move away from the fundamentals and move to the big, hard, angular, masculine curves of the X7 and reassert our dominance over black, big screen, slabbed media, smartphone things. The X7, which was going to be out on AT&T with it was going to have a funky name. David, what was the funky name? I can't remember.
No, I can't remember.
Rafe, the X7, what was going to happen? Is it Aurora or something?
I can't remember either, but obviously...
This is why Nokia has nice, simple names and letters. It's for men like us who can only think that far. The X7, of course, is a 4-inch screened, capacitive slab device. It looks, I have to say, absolutely gorgeous in terms of the hardware and the lines. It's slightly tucked down at the corners. This really is... Exactly, same sort of styling and cutting edge as we've seen from pieces like HTC of Samsung and the other devices. Rafe, this is right up there. This is a 2011 smartphone for the masses, isn't it?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. I would agree with you. I think this sits sort of firmly in what tends to be called the superphone category. You know, it's got the 4-inch AMOLED screen, so it looks, you know, absolutely gorgeous. And in person, actually, it looks even better than in the photos. I don't actually think it has much in common with any of the other devices in terms of design. It really is quite distinctive and very different from what we've seen before. And I think the way they've changed the edges, and particularly the materials on it's glass, metal, and the sort of slightly curved back. It's actually, if anything, reminiscent of the Sony Ericsson Arc, but it is slightly thicker, but not nearly so sort of flimsy and delicate, I would say, as the Arc. It's, you know, got a slightly more solid, durable feel to it, but as I say, it is still very slim indeed. And it's quite impressive they've managed to put this into this package. But it's a definite departure from the sort of rectangular slabs we've been used to. The one thing I would say about this is it's actually the design that sets it apart. And I wonder whether that will be enough because it is an extremely competitive space. This kind of 4-inch superphone space, you know, has a lot of entries. And, you know, particularly in both Android, but also I think you can bring the iPhone into this. Obviously, it's not the same screen size, but it's that kind of superphone category. And I think perhaps the Symbian 3 software, as it's generally perceived now, whether it's a fair perception or not is a different question, may actually pull this device down a bit. But I will say, you know, in terms of design, very, very distinctive. It certainly fits very comfortably into the hand, and it seems to have caught a lot of people's attention. From a purely personal point of view, it's not the sort of device I'm particularly interested in, partly because I do like my QWERTY keyboards, and you know, I'm willing to, you know, settle for something else if it's, you know, either a small form factor like the C7 or has a great camera on it like the N8. But for the X7, this really is about the kind of the entertainment focus, but as we know, the software is similar between all the Symbian 3 devices. This really is about the design, and it is certainly very eye-catching in person.
Yeah, just talking about the design of the X7, it's a shame the timing didn't work out so that they could affiliate this with the Tron movie, because I think the hard angular lines, it looked very much like the Tron phone, a very science fiction sort of device. I mean, I have seen comments on Twitter about, why would you buy the X7 when there's the N8 already? I think the thing is that you're trading the camera for the bigger screen, so it's consumption instead of creation. Quite simply.
And I think the other thing about the X7 is, if this had come out as one of the first Symbian 3 devices, I know it's coming off with Symbian Anna out of the box, this is almost like the base profile. It's like the N8 is this with a camera, the E7 is this with QWERTY, the C7 is this after it's been put underneath a steamroller, and the C6 is this after it's done an impression of Mike TV in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and squished down to a very small size. This appears to be almost like the reference device here, Rafe.
Yes, there is a certain element to that. I think, you know, this was designed to address a different market point to everything else. And the fact it's come out as kind of the fifth or the sixth device, depending on the way you look at it, does seem slightly out of order. And I think as a result, it's, you know, more difficult to get excited about the X7 in many ways. On the other hand, I don't really think someone like I, or indeed anyone on this podcast, are necessarily in the target market for this device. You know, this is kind of a successor to the X6, which I know you were quite fond of, Ewan. You know, and it does have, you know, good multimedia credentials and the 4-inch screen. I mean, it's not a clear black display screen, despite what you may have read elsewhere. What they've actually done is reduce the air gap between the AMOLED screen and the Gorilla Glass, which does cut down on reflections and gives it, you know, better performance. I only had a chance to look at it briefly, but I'd actually sort of position it somewhere between the N8 screen and the E7 screen. So that's, you know, they're both actually pretty decent. And certainly, you know, playing back videos and playing games, the X7 does look very nice indeed. And that extra, you know, half inch of screen space does make a difference, as we've seen with the, you know, the E7. And having it in this sort of very flat form factor, you know, it is, you know, it's 11 millimeters or so thin. So it's, you know, thinner than the N8 and obviously thinner than the E7 as well, but there's certainly, it does just bring me back to this idea that there's a lot of competition in this space, so it's going to be harder for it to stand out. On the other hand, you know, this is about giving people who are looking to buy a Nokia phone, a Nokia smartphone, another choice of form factor, and that I think it does do quite effectively, because it does stand out as something different from anything that's gone before it, you know. And yes, you might talk about the order of it, but for those looking for an entertainment or content consumption centric device with a sort of, you know, a really, I think it is a design that stands out, and it's not just standing out from the other Symbian 3 devices, it's standing out from those touch slabs, of which there are a great number. And with, you know, the web browser fixed, with the text input now sorted out, actually, you know, the X7 is an extremely capable device, and you look at the sort of technical specs, the other bits and pieces in it that we sort of take for granted on Symbian 3, it does offer some unique characteristics over other devices that kind of sit in this space, in this form factor.
And in an alternative universe, this would have been the device that would have taken Symbian 3 into America as the beachhead.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think we can discuss, you know, whether the X7 and whether Symbian 3 is suitable for states. I think quite clearly there is an issue there. How much of it's perception, how much of it is the UI not being updated, you know, that's an argument that's going to run and run. But you can see, just from a purely hardware point of view, if you put this device on with either an updated Symbian or something else, I think actually people would go, wow, this is really quite attractive. Look at the feature set it's got in it in terms of, you know, the EDOF camera is actually a lot more decent than people give it credit for. But I'm talking things like, you know, obviously USB on the go, the pentaband 3G, so you can use it anywhere in the world. You know, the memory card slot, so you can have expandability if you want, and all the other bits and pieces that we talk about as sort of, you know, the generic base hardware of Symbian 3. Yes, it could have been, you know, you think about a different world and wonder where things might have gone.
Yeah, and I suspect we'll hear a lot of Americans going, well, that's a really nice device, I'll buy that when it's got Windows Phone 7, which we'll come on to in a couple of months' time. But Rafe, you said this wasn't your phone, but I have a sneaky suspicion that the other device announced is your phone, the Nokia E6, the largest Symbian 3 pixel-sized screen. I think it's the first one that we're getting in white as well. This is the one where your enterprise, at 2 or 3 years of stability and a strong device, this must be where they're going for this one. This must be the sort of one that Nokia hoping will keep them in the game in corporate terms for another 12 months.
Yes, that's right. But I would also say it's wider than that. It's for anyone who loved the E71 and the E72, but have been finding those devices getting a bit long in the tooth. If you want a QWERTY keyboard but don't want something as big as the E7, you know, this is a device for you. And I think that's a pretty large target market. You know, this is, you know, a device that looks like the BlackBerry. And there's a very good reason those are so popular and sold so many. And there's a good reason the E71 and the E72, you know, were among Nokia's best-selling smartphones ever. And yes, the VGA screen's a nice upgrade. The keyboards, it is improved over what's gone before. It's got the smile shape from the E5. It's got the texture from the sort of E72. And actually, in terms of the sort of tactile feedback, it's somewhere between the E71 and the E72. In terms of build quality, this is on a par, I would say, with the E71. So it's better than the E72. It's got, you know, the standard 8-megapixel EDOF camera sitting on the back. And that's actually pretty capable, especially for video. One bad areas, maybe macro photography when you're taking business cards or document scanning, although actually, you know, if you take pictures from a meter away, receipts, business cards, you know, barcode scanning, fine. The one thing it doesn't do is document scanning. But, you know, it's in an incredibly small package. It's still only 59 millimeters wide, which means it fits very comfortably into one hand. And this is easily the best of the Symbian 3 devices for using one-handed. And the combination of the QWERTY and touch, you know, that's, you know, there are devices out there that do this, but it's going to be one of the first mainstream smartphones that's like selling large numbers that does that. And it's obviously a first for Nokia from that point of view as well. I think it's a very worthy and, you know, very nice successor to the E72. I'm really looking forward to getting my hands on this over a longer term, you know, because it maintains pretty much all the great characteristics of the 71, the 72, but actually brings it bang up to date with the Symbian 3 software and the hardware, while maintaining its best characteristics in terms of size and battery life and things like that. So, yes, this device suits me a lot better than something like the X7. I also think, you know, some of the design touches, attention to detail on this is really quite incredible. We're going to talk about this in a preview on All About Symbian, but it's the little things like a mute light on the mute key, the charging light, you know, the notification light still there. The positioning of the various keys has been very carefully thought about. The keyboard shortcuts are all still there. It all fits together very nice. And as I say, build quality has always been important on these kind of devices. And I think the E6, what I saw of it, which admittedly was only an hour or so's worth, really did nail it. And so I'm very much looking forward to seeing more of this device.
Now, there's something about the E6 which is a little unusual compared with the rest of the Symbian 3 phones, and that's its screen resolution, because whereas the other Symbian 3 phones are 640 by 360, which is called NHD, the E6 is VGA, which is 640 by 480 pixels, which means developers need to take note of this. But there is a story on All About Symbian, which I did, with links to a guide to help you with what you need to think about. I won't go too much into developing side of it, but things that developers need to think about is using scalable graphics instead of fixed size graphics, so that graphical elements look better when they're scaled, and don't hard code into your application's screen resolutions, because Symbian allows you to query for what available screen size you have. And if you do that, you can do the relatively trivial calculations of making your user interface fit what screen area you have, because the interesting thing about the E6 is that it's got more pixels but in a smaller area, whereas it still needs to be finger friendly, so the touch UI elements need to actually be proportionately larger.
Yeah, no, that's right, David. Talking to the Nokia people behind the E6, it's evident that quite a lot of the third-party software has been sensibly written, is already compatible, it's already got a couple of thousand entries in OviStore, which for a device this early on is actually relatively unusual, probably reflecting the maturity of OviStore. But yes, that VGA screen is very important. It does have another effect, of course. It really increases the pixel density. It's at 326 pixels per inch, which is significantly more, obviously, than we've had before. It's easily the highest density on any Symbian device. And consequently, as you say, there has had to be some thinking about how do you redesign the target size for a touch. And for example, there's only three home screen widgets displayed at any one time instead of six. That's partly because of the orientation. But also throughout the software, you know, there are a few changes. For example, in general, the command button areas, the three buttons that often sit above the soft keys on the sort of traditional NHD devices have been moved to the right-hand side of the screen, but that's not true of every application. For example, they're not there in messaging, where it makes sense to make the most of the screen size. But also in terms of things like web browsing, and particularly I think it's noticeable when you're doing messaging or looking at attachments, this extra screen resolution means you can get more information on the screen, and it's, you know, pin sharp. You know, it looks absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, we talked actually not long ago in a previous podcast about screen resolution, and said the sort of QVGA didn't really measure up on something like the E72. And this is, you know, this is the answer to it. It's four times as many pixels on this device with pretty much exactly the same screen size. It's actually slightly bigger active area, which is great, especially given, say, they haven't increased the actual physical dimension of the device. But I think, you know, people will be quite impressed when they see this VGA screen, because it does make a big difference, particularly, as I say, in web browsing and messaging. And the Symbian 3, the other Symbian 3 devices, you know, they are fine by comparison, but in this particular form factor, I do think it makes a lot of sense. And seeing a really sharp screen did bring that home to me.
So a busy week all round in the world of Symbian. Reports of its death are greatly exaggerated, or at least have gone viral way too fast, way too quickly. As always, the story continues all around the web and our little corner, www.allaboutsymbian.com. Steve will be back next week, and we can regale him of tales of merriment and abandoned and jousting that we all did this week, so please don't anybody tell him. It just remains to thank my faithful squire, David Gilson.
Thank you for listening, everyone, but see you next week.
My incredibly royal king, Rafe Blanford.
Thanks, everybody.
And you out there, not necessarily our loyal, but at least our attentive listeners, because it's for this that we do the show for. It so you can hear our voices and you can sit there in the corner and go, you know, I completely disagree with that. Let's head to the website and leave a comment. So head to the website, leave a comment. We'll see you next week. Ta-ra!